Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Chicago's Michael Shannon is directing Heinrich Ibsen's An Enemy of the People at the Red Orchid Theater. Now, the play opens, I believe, tonight. Is that right, Michael?
Oh, well, no. We're going to open. The opening night is going to be January 14th. We're still in. We're almost to previews, but it's an adaptation of Enemy of the People by our ensemble member Brett Nevue, and it's called Traitor. We've updated it and set it in Illinois, in a small town in Illinois called East Lake, a fictional town. And we just tried to give it a bit of a contemporary spin because it is quite an old piece of theater, although. Mm-hmm. Certainly timely, yes.
Yeah, we'll get into that here in just a minute. I have to finish reading my introduction of you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't mind.
It says here the play opens tonight, but I'm going to go ahead and cross that part out if you don't mind. It says here you have seen Shannon in everything from Groundhog Day to Batman V. Do you say V or Versus? It says V in the title. What's the right read on that?
Oh, Jesus. I wish I knew.
Batman V, Superman, Dawn of Justice, Elvis and Nixon. You saw him in Boardwalk Empire, Nocturnal Animals, and now The Shape of Water. His father was an accounting professor, and his grandfather was a famed entomologist.
That's correct.
What did he famously do in entomology?
He studied mosquitoes. He, I think, was primarily concerned with the migration of mosquitoes from Africa to South America. Huh. And all the various ailments they were bringing with them, one of which he ultimately caught and died from. But he has left quite an impression. There's a lot about him at the Smithsonian, if you care to go digging for it. And apparently, there's a place in Panama called Shannon's Cove that is actually named after my grandfather.
No kidding.
They must have had some good parties down there. So
I'm going to continue with the introduction, and then we'll get to the body of this interview in just a minute. And while you may know him best as the guy who read that sorority letter that went viral on Funny or Die a couple of years ago.
If Sigma Nu said, yeah, we're going to invite Zeta over, would you be happy? Would you?
No, you wouldn't!
I'm recommending the new Guillermo del Toro Cold War fairy tale, in which he plays the really, really bad guy, Richard Strickland, whose job it is to maintain and eventually dispose of a government asset, a man-fish creature.
Clean that lab, you get out.
You may think that thing looks human. Stands on two legs, right? But we're created in the Lord's image. You don't think that's what the Lord looks like, do you?
This creature is intelligent, capable of language.
You need to take it apart, learn how it works.
That's some stuff there, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I got lucky to get to work with Guillermo del Toro. He's probably one of the best filmmakers we got going nowadays, I think.
Yeah. I described your character as a really bad guy. You would agree with that, Ryan?
Well, I suppose. I mean, I guess part of my job, honestly, is to always try and see people in as many different dimensions and aspects as possible. I mean, to a certain extent, he believes, anyway, that he's doing what he's supposed to be doing. He's part of a system, and he is interested in doing a good job and making his way up the ladder, which is a very common American impulse, seems to me. Yeah. But he's there's not much he's not willing to do, I guess.
Boy, you got that right.
Yeah.
In fact, when you read that part, does an actor like you think, oh, God, this is going to be, I will so immerse myself in the awfulness of this person, it will be a fun dive? Or, on some level, you think, oh boy, now I'm going to be that bad guy. People are going to hate that character who is me. Does it ever work that way for an actor like you?
Well, no. I mean, I never really take it personally how people feel about the characters I play. I mean, the way I look at it is what my aptitude is or my ability or whatnot is to help other people tell stories.
Yeah.
And I like doing that. So,
well, when you do that, like I was telling my friends here in the studios earlier in the show, there's a scene where you think you know where the creature is now, and you go storming down a hall, and you kick down a door, and you are fury. Plus, you've got two gangrenous fingers that you're about to rip off. I mean, you are in a really bad place.
Yes.
And I wonder, how do you get amped up for that scene? Is it a switch, or do you do some sort of mental calisthenics to really get enraged? Mm. How do you do that? Like, could you do it right now?
I think it's really just a matter of imagination, using your imagination. I mean, it's, you know, there's something kind of childlike about it in a way. I mean, it is, you're playing a character. And, you know, if you look at a little kid who puts himself in the same scenario, they're able to kind of drift off into alternate realities fairly easily. Mm-hmm. And then we grow up and become more, you know, quote unquote serious. But if you hold on to that sense of what it was like when you were a kid pretending to be other people in other situations, then it's not, you know, I read the script and I take my cues from the writing. The writing to me is the really difficult part of the process, actually coming up with these stories and these characters. And so I am very respectful of it. And I look at it kind of from a point of view of what does this scene need, or what is this moment, how is this moment fitting into the story as a whole? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I have access to my emotions, you know, probably based largely on the fact that I've been doing this for 25 years.
Yeah, no
kidding. It's
So then if you say, okay, in this scene, I'll bet you half hour before you guys shot that scene, you weren't just out of your mind berserk mad. Right?
No.
You were nice to people, probably, right?
Well, honestly, and I've heard Guillermo talk about this sometimes when he does interviews, I'm pretty quiet when I'm at work. I'm not in character, because I find that just to be a waste of energy, but I'm just thinking, I'm thoughtful about
so then they say, okay, action. Do they say action when they do the scene? Action.
They do. Okay. They do. By and large, they say action.
And then you just like, you just bubbles up. And
yeah.
You can do that.
Yeah. And then it's become kind of Pavlovian over the years. It's like, it's almost like hypnosis. It's like the Manchurian Candidate, you know. When they say action, you just go somewhere else.
And then are you able to turn it off as quickly after the scene? Because after you do some of that stuff and say some of those things, I was telling Steve, if I were you, if I were an actor that in the moment, I would turn around and apologize to everybody. I go, I'm sorry I stuck my finger in your wound, and I'm sorry I called you those terrible things, and I don't know who's going to fix your door.
Well, we actually have a great solidarity amongst us. You know, I could be doing a scene where, you know, I'm having an adversarial exchange with somebody, but as soon as they say cut, you know, that subsides very quickly. Usually it's more about trying to figure out if we're happy with what just did.
How that happened. Worked. How did that work? Yeah. Yeah.
Did that feel right to you? You know, sometimes, particularly with, you know, it's easy to forget when you're watching the movie that the creature is actually a real person in that suit, and a wonderful actor named Doug Jones. And I would worry for him, not so much, I wasn't personally hurting him, but it was, being in that suit is very uncomfortable, and he had to spend a lot of time down on his knees and stuff, and he's a very thin man. He doesn't have a lot of padding, so I would worry about his knees sometimes. But no, it really is make believe at the end of the day.
Hmm. It's 2:17. Michael Shannon's in our studio. I want to talk about your play at the Red Orchid Theater. Yep. Just one last question, though, or two about this movie, The Shape of Water. What do you make of that movie? When people ask you what that movie's about, what do you say?
Well, I think ultimately it's a love story. You know, Guillermo describes it as a fairy tale for troubled times. But, you know, it's so easy to forget. And, you know, I think Strickland, by and large, represents, you know...
That's your character, yeah.
Yes, Colonel Strickland. It represents... the government and, you know, all these trials and tribulations, stuff flying around nowadays that can get you so bothered. But that at the end of the day, what's really important and special is just the connection between these two lost souls who can barely communicate with the rest of the world, but are able to find, real love and affection with one another, and that's what's really important at the end of the day.
I wondered if I was reading too much into the movie when I saw or noticed that the people that do have a connection with this creature are people who are, like you said, lost souls, who don't have a natural place in that 1950s Americana world.
Right.
A black woman, a mute, a communist, a gay man. You might as well be a sea creature to the rest of the country at that time.
Yeah, that's pretty astute. Yeah, that's kind of, I think, what Guillermo was going for.
Pretty astute, Michael Shannon just said. Steve, hold on. My news guy is in the newsroom over there. Steve, I don't know if you're listening right now.
He called you astute. I heard it.
Thank you.
He's just a very kind man. Can I ask one quick one, Michael?
Yeah.
I'm interested in your deference to the writing and say, you know, you rely on what's written. I mean, I've seen screenplays. There aren't a lot of words in screenplays. So the character, there must be creation of a character that goes beyond just what's written there. Right? Explain what goes into that.
I would say that Shape of Water is a pretty good read, that it's pretty well fleshed out. And the thing is like, Guillermo's a big believer in preparation. He loves to spend time with the actors before we start shooting. He rehearses a lot. He has meetings with you by yourself where you talk about your character's backstory and whatnot. He actually he writes backstories for each of the characters, and he gives them to you. And he says, you know, this is what I was thinking. Maybe you have a different idea. You don't have to use this, but I just wanted you to know where I was coming from. And so that's also very helpful. I mean, look, I'm not saying that I don't do anything, but I think I'm just saying I'm never tremendously focused on my own grandeur, you know. I'm just trying to tell the story. I look at it as very it's like a service, being an actor. It's, you know, that's why actors are such good waiters, because we're like servants.
Oh, yes. So really, well, that's a means of survival for some, you know, preliminarily. Maybe it's a good acting tool to have, service to the script, like the customer. Although, you have such a tool. I mean, let's face it, you are really good at generating a character and delivering it if that character has strong emotions. Do you ever turn that on your wife or kids? Are you able to, like, say, you know, the dish rag is in the wrong spot or the room isn't picked up? I don't know what the things are that you and your family would have issue with sometimes, but any of those mundane things we do, can you just turn that thing on and say, and just get all Colonel Strickland on them?
Oh, boy, I always try not to. I don't. Yeah.
Dangerous. You shouldn't go there, man. Don't do that.
No, that would be unfortunate, I think.
Go wait, I'm sorry. let's talk about the play.
Okay.
It's not opening tonight. I don't know if you heard that, but it had been previously reported in some media reports that it was opening tonight, and I don't want people to...
Sorry, John. It's not your fault. It's probably my fault.
No, it's fine. Is it at the Red Orchid Theater?
A Red Orchid Theater, 1531 North Wall Street.
And you say that it's an appropriate play for this time?
Well, yeah, apparently there are a lot of productions of An Enemy of the People being scheduled around the country. I believe there's going to be a production at the Goodman and, you know, in other cities around the country. And a lot of people are thinking that it's, yeah, that it's the time to be doing it based on, I don't know.
Well, hold on. I can imagine, but hold on a second, because I don't even know that. I do not know this story as well as evidently a lot of people do.
Oh, can I lay it out for you?
In just a minute. Michael Shannon from Shape of Water, among other things, is in our studio at the Red Orchid Theater. You can see the show that he is directing called Traitor. It's a version of Heinrich Ibsen's An Enemy of the People. It opens,
January 14th.
January 14th. Yes, so what's the story of this?
Well, in the original, well, maybe I should just skip the original and talk about it. Yes, so there's this town, East Lake, that was kind of a small, it's a small town, fictional town in Illinois that went through kind of a depressed economic period, was kind of floundering, and then they opened a charter school that was phenomenally successful and was bringing lots of families to the town and kind of reinvigorating the town. But the only problem is the science teacher at the school, Dr. Stock, realizes upon doing some investigation that the soil that the school is standing on is contaminated with lead. And so the play is basically seeing how the town reacts to this news, how they try to deal with it. Dr. Stock, his sister is the mayor of the town, Patty Stock. So there's some tension there because the mayor's trying to figure out what to do about this information. Yes.
Oh, you mean it reflects badly on the mayor? Like now he's in trouble and his sister's part of the information chain?
Well, no. The mayor's a woman, Patty Stock. The teacher, Dr. Tom Stock, is her brother. And so they have their own brother-sister issues to deal with. And then you throw this into the mix and it gets pretty... pretty dramatic, yes. But it's a play. It has a lot going on, and it also has a lot of humor. It's not you know, just doom and gloom the whole time. But it basically deals with, you know, these situations that seem to crop up all the time, where we realize that there's something threatening happening that might be threatening our well-being, and we're not exactly sure what to do about it or how to fix it.
And you don't mean just in terms of lead in the soil, but maybe culturally, I mean, is it dangerous to or tempting to cast the meaning of that more broadly than, you know, than the script itself?
Yes, I mean, I think there's a reason, you know, this play, the original play, was written, you know, a very long time ago and was relevant at the time that it was... produced, and it's remained relevant all these years, and so I think it ultimately is dealing with an aspect of our sociological behavior that seems to be repeating itself. Yes,
I don't know what that means. What aspect of our behavior?
Well, you know, the way that we choose to deal with circumstances that are perhaps detrimental to our well-being. But, you know, for example, this thing going on right now with deregulation, how deregulation is going to bolster our economy. It's going to create jobs. It's going to save the world. The only problem with deregulation is you're pumping tons and tons of toxins into the earth, which could ultimately become uninhabitable, and then human beings would disappear as a species. So it's kind of a fork in the road here, you know. And we seem to be at this fork in the road often, you know.
It's funny, our Rokan had Aaron Brockovich on yesterday talking about deregulation with the DEA and some of these sorts of things. What's going on there? Why are we taking the other path right now, would you say?
Well, I don't know. I think it has to do with people with tremendous amounts of money having a great deal of influence and deciding that they have so much money that no matter what happens, probably I suspect, I don't know any of these people personally, but they probably think, well, I'm just so damn rich that even if, you know, the world becomes a completely toxic wasteland, I'll be able to build, you know, my own little bubble, or maybe get in a rocket and fly to Mars and build a mansion up there.
Or I'll be dead before it really matters anyway.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about climate change. I don't know how, if anybody is not sure, say you're on the bubble, like, ah, maybe that's just a scientific hoax, but maybe it's not. That other maybe it's not has to be on one of your shoulders. Your kids or grandkids are going to inherit the consequences of that.
Mm-hmm.
If you are wrong, your children are screwed. Yeah. So I don't know how anybody isn't on that side, but everybody isn't. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I wish I could justify the behavior, but, you know, it's an issue that gets bandied about in this play a great deal, because the fact of the matter is that if the school gets shut down in East Lake, Illinois, the economic prosperity that has just begun to blossom there is in jeopardy. So it's not a completely illegitimate concern, and that's where a lot of the tension comes from in the play.
Amen to that. So that's Traitor, and that's going to be at the Red Orchid, opening January 15th.
Sure.
15th.
14th. I was going to give you a day.
If you showed up the 15th.
Here's the easy way to remember it.
I have no hope to remember that.
It's my daughter's birthday.
It's 10 days after my wife's. By the way, you are appearing at the Metro when?
Oh, thank you. Tomorrow night, which is Saturday night, the 6th, Saturday, January 6th, I'll be performing with a wonderful band called Sons of the Silent Age. They perform the music of David Bowie. I've seen them before, and they're absolutely fantastic. And I will be making a guest appearance
as
Iggy Pop.
How many songs are you going to do?
5 songs.
Wow.
I will be Iggy Pop for about 20 minutes, I suppose.
Lucky you. And will you be channeling Iggy Pop, or will you just be Michael Shannon doing Iggy Pop songs?
I'm still hypothesizing about that. I've seen Iggy Pop. I think Iggy Pop may be the most dynamic performer I've ever seen on stage. I doubt I'm capable of genuinely channeling that, but I'll give it the old college try.
I understand it's a fundraiser. If you go to metrochicago.com, metrochicago.com, you can get tickets to see that. It's nice to visit with you. I appreciate your time. Congratulations on the work on the film, and good luck with the play, too.
Thank you, John. Thanks for having me.